beautiful day. You know why?
Why?
Is it because the sun is shining and there are no solar eclipses?
No, Ben. It's because there's another episode of Magic the Amateuring.
Hooray!
Wait, what's that?
It's a podcast for Magic the Gathering learners.
Are you guys learning about Magic the Gathering as we speak?
We are.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes. I would venture to say I'm always learning about it.
Constantly.
Welcome to the show, listener. My name is Ben. I am the relative expert here on Magic the Amateuring, and I've taught my two friends, Marie and Megan, how to play the game, and they're way, way too into it to be healthy.
You're right.
That's fairly true.
This is Maria.
Hi, everybody.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Megan.
I don't get enough sleep at night.
Who does?
That may be related to magic.
That might be.
The three of us are your regular hosts, but today we're actually joined by a very special guest.
Oh, I'm so excited, what? You guys.
I'm super excited.
You guys.
Who is it?
Guys, I'm gonna get out of the expert chair. I'm gonna step down. Hold on.
Oh no, Ben. Ugh. It's so tall.
Come join us on the floor, which is where the amateurs
are. This is some amateur floor.
Let me find a carpet square.
Take a beanbag chair.
All right.
And sit down. How does it feel to be an amateur?
Oh, I feel dirty.
Liberating? Oh, I was going to say liberating.
Dirty. Yeah, dirty and free.
We're like the groundlings at the theater in the round.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The globe.
The totally. Globe. Thank you, that one.
That's whatever. Such a cultured reference.
I'm super smart.
You guys, we have a great show because we have a Magic level 3 judge with us here today. Judge
level
Rob
3, McKenzie. Holy butt.
That's important and very good. I learned that today.
Yes. Hi, welcome, Rob. Introduce yourself.
I'm Rob McKenzie. I'm L3. I am not the most recent L3. There's been, I think, two since me.
Okay.
And I made L3 in Kansas City just during the summer.
And congratulations!
Thank you.
There,
yes.
Probably. Wasn't it the Grand Prix?
Yeah, Grand Prix Kansas City.
Oh my god, Ben and I were totally there.
Yeah, we were there.
We totally clapped
for
you.
Did you feel like the air kind of change in the room?
I was like, oh shit, I feel judged.
There was like a chilly draft that swept through the convention hall.
Somebody made level 3.
Well, congratulations on your promotion to level 3. For our listeners who are maybe not as familiar with the judge levels, what exactly does it mean to be a level 3 judge?
So an L3 judge is a regional judge.
Okay.
An L3 is supposed to attend major events in their region and build up...
Like weddings. Magic weddings.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
My wedding was a magic wedding, and I did attend that.
What? We're going to have to hear that story later.
Yes. But the L3s are expected to attend major events in their region. They're attended, build regional leadership, help build overall program construction-related things, help other judges level up, build experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm working with 4 different people that are... L2s that are kind of on L3 track right now.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Which it's a lot of work to make it to L3. It's like, if you're pretty ready, it's still probably about a year of stuff that you have to do in general.
Wow.
It's not full-time stuff. It's just because you need to, write up a big long self-review, and you need to spend a bunch of time hitting minimum standards for events. You have to head judge so many events. You have to have worked so many competitive level events. You have to have tested so many people for level 1, because level 2s can test level 1s.
Right.
And then you need to, once you've got your self-review approved, you can get recommendation reviews from other L3s, or from, at that point, you're not an L3 yet, from L3s.
Mm-hmm.
And you need 2 of those, and you also need to get approval to be a team lead at a Grand Prix. And so you team lead at a Grand Prix, you usually get handed a very experienced L3 as a shadow at that point. In my case, I got handed 2, because why not?
Bonus.
And then if you do that well enough, then you get a recommendation from the head judge of the Grand Prix as that you're capable of leading a team and working with a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start the actual real hard part of the process, where you do a bunch of pre-event interview essay questions.
Essay questions.
I ended up with... I
thought we got away from those.
I can't give a lot of specific stuff, but I had to... I had to talk about a mistake that I've made judging how I, like a major mistake that I've made judging how I've corrected it, how I dealt with it.
I was too good of a judge.
Well, in my case, it was
too perfectly. All the other judges felt inadequate.
The goal of that is to figure out, because there's 12 qualities that are wanted out of L3s.
Yeah.
And the goal is to have a whole bunch of information going to your panel, which is essentially an interview. And so they spend 3 hours trying to figure out your weak points and where you're bad at stuff, because they want to figure out what you're not very good at.
Yeah.
And so you like it's
baking cakes.
Yeah, pretty much. They put me through a grinder of 3 hours of interview, and then we come out at the end, and the judge that was running it said, okay, so in these 8 categories, you have no problems. You're great. And I'm like, okay. And this category, you need substantial improvement, but that's one of the growth areas that we're not that worried about.
Was it the weakness to kryptonite category?
It was the investigations category, which is investigations is
There's
probably
been a
the hardest
magic
to train.
Murder.
Well, that's yes. Investigations are people
it's serious
cheat.
Business.
People cheat. Yeah. People
cheat
at events or people. Offer their opponent some kind of shady deal, and then you have to figure out. They both say that the person said different things.
Oh,
or,
sure.
Or
got to be Judge Judy on stuff like
right.
that.
Or like they sit down and they go, "No, I have you at 3. No, I have you at 6."
Yeah.
Well, can you sort out why? Not just why this happened, but if they're actually doing something that's genuinely bad, can you spot that they're doing something that's genuinely bad, and you have to investigate further?
Yeah.
Investigations are hard and they're infrequent. Like, the humongous majority of people don't cheat at magic events, right?
That's really nice of them.
It's really surprising how few people are actively cheating
at
any given moment.
That's part of what judges are there for, is to be deterrents to that, too.
We
actively do deck checks at competitive events.
I would be terrified of a judge if they were like, "Are you cheating?" I'd be like, "No, I'd never cheat. I wouldn't do it."
Well, that's usually not the tact that most of us take. Like, so the trick is that we want to see what your kind of responses are oftentimes.
Yeah.
And so when we're investigating cheating type stuff, oftentimes it'll be, I had a person at a recent event who dramatically misplayed a card. It was a legacy event, and it was a card that's texted changed over time.
Yeah.
And
lots of opportunities dramatically misplayed.
Right. And what happened is he asked his opponent about it. He's like, I think that this works this way. And his opponent said, Yeah, I'm sure it works that way. And he goes, well, let's call a judge. He goes, no, I'm totally certain it works that way.
Oh,
the opponent
dear.
Did. And he said, okay. And they'd called a judge. The judge started to come over. They said, no, it's fine. We got it. We figured it out in the 7 seconds. And he said, okay. And then a couple turns later, a spectator walked over, looked at the board and said, how in the heck did this happen? Like how is this?
Yeah.
And
possible.
This isn't like this card should be in your graveyard here, right? And they're like, no, he played it this way. And the spectator goes, it doesn't work that way. Let's call a judge over. And so I had to come over. And so the questions aren't, it doesn't start on, are you cheating? Or did you know how this card works?
No.
have you played this card a bunch today? You get a baseline for what kind of stuff they're telling the truth on. You ask them, have you played this card before today? And they go, no. Really? Didn't you top 8 another Legacy event, another Star City Games Open last year? He goes,
so you kind of have to know that kind of stuff sometimes.
Yeah,
players even.
Yeah, it's important to have a good support network, because the way that I went into the investigation was one of the operations people, the person doing the scorekeeping, was a very experienced L3, and he picked up the results slip and he took a look at it, and it has the warning that was given for the game player on it.
Yeah.
And he turned it over and he looked at it and he said, I don't believe this. A person this experienced wouldn't have misplayed this card, I don't think. And he called me over and he explained it, and I said, I don't know him. He's not from my area.
Yeah.
And he says, well, he's from the Indianapolis area. He top 8 at a Star City Games in Indy 10 months ago. And I said, really? I don't follow 100% of all coverage. I don't know all the names.
Yeah.
But he had been at the event and he knew, because he had score kept that event. And so he said, yeah, go talk to this guy. And it turns out that the guy at every previous Legacy event, he had played a blue combo deck called Solidarity, which is a deck that is just about building high storm count and then using brain freeze to kill the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
It has no creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And the card that he misplayed was Caracas, which bounces legendary creatures. And this, he's like, this is the only deck I play in Legacy. I just started playing Legacy about a year and some ago. I get handed this deck by my friend. Didn't know how Caracas worked. And I said, yeah, like, I'll totally buy it. We went and looked up his deck list. He had played Solidarity at that event. He was like, I totally did not intend to misplay this card. He was totally fine. But he, that's an area where, like, it's possible for somebody to fish their opponent into letting them misplay something and then get away with it, and they won't even notice.
Wow.
If we don't investigate.
And so, I had no idea that it was, you know, so you guys went so deep with this kind of stuff.
It's not common. I don't...
No, but, I mean, if there are players in the community that are doing this frequently, like, they frequently get warnings or something because of, you know, they're trying to get away with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just good for the community as a whole to, like, figure... Yeah. We have to get to the bottom of it. Otherwise, it's just going to become more and more of a problem.
Yep. And a lot of judging is community relations stuff, too. Letting people know that, A, you're going to investigate.
Yeah.
B, they can come up and tell you problems, that they know you. That they're comfortable with you running their events, that they know you aren't gonna do things like make an... If they see you as head judge and they say, oh, this tournament's going to be an extra hour because this head judge always does things that makes this tournament take longer.
Yeah.
That's miserable. You don't want people to be unhappy with you running events.
Yeah. And now also that guy who misplayed that card and all of the people within six seats of him are never going to accidentally or intentionally misplay that card. Ever.
Probably not. Hopefully. Or at least not in that same way.
Yeah.
So why did you decide that you wanted to become a judge? I assume you're just a player beforehand.
Yeah.
What drew you to it? Why did you want to do it?
So I've always been a big rules geek for as long as I played the game.
Yeah, me too. High five.
Yes.
Boom.
And so I'd always really loved the rules, and I showed up to an event in Madison that was run by, run at Misty Mountain Games. It was a Pro Tour qualifier.
I've been there. It's a good store.
Yeah. This was multiple different buildings ago.
Yeah, sure.
So it was a lot smaller space, and it was packed, just totally tightly packed. And there were only, I want to say, three staff for 160 players. Yikes. Or something. It was massively understaffed.
Gross.
And know that the staff was really good. These are the people, like, the staff, the head judge was Chris Richter, who's now an L4. But I went up to Chris and I said, Chris, didn't seem like you had a bunch of people at this event. Do you need judges and staff? Do you want somebody to be willing to help out? He said, yeah. If you want to judge an event with me so that we can get some feel and chat about some stuff, I've got a Grand Prix trial in 2 weeks.
So your first event was a Junior Super Series, and you just kind of kept rolling from there?
You enjoyed
running the event?
And... Yeah, I had fun with it. And
did you have to take a test before this point?
Well, I was still... So I was an L0. Everybody's a level 0 judge.
And everybody?
Yeah, everybody.
Look,
Maria!
Look deep within yourself.
Congratulations.
Good job, Megan.
Thank you.
And so on Sunday, Chris Richter was in charge of testing, and he taps me, and I go to Rashad and I say, Rashad, I gotta take a little bit of time and go take my judge test. And he goes, testing for level 2? I said, no, testing for level 1. He said, what the heck are you doing? Go take your level 1 test and pass it. And so
is it a difficult test?
At the time, it was easier than it is now.
Ooh.
But it's still not that hard. The level 1 test is 25 questions, 20 rules questions, and 5 questions about the judging at regular REL document. REL stands for rules enforcement level. Different tournaments are enforced at different levels.
So like casual game store draft night versus
And so there's basically 3 levels. There is regular, which is like Friday Night Magic's.
Mm-hmm.
If you play drafted a Friday Night Magic, you don't use a deck list, for instance.
Right.
And then there's competitive. This is stuff like Pro Tour qualifiers, Grand Prix trials, the first day of Grand Prix are all competitive. You use deck lists. There's infractions for making certain kinds of errors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain expectations for the players and the judges that are different about making sure that the gameplay is cleaner. And then there's professional. And professional events are day 2 of Grand Prix and Pro Tours are run at professional. And the biggest difference for the huge majority of people is spectators at professional events can't intervene in a match. So if they see something, normally at like a pro tour qualifier, if you see something wrong in a match,
you can say something.
Yeah, you can stop them and say, hold on, I think there's a problem here, and call a judge to come over and fix it. Spectators aren't supposed to say anything at all.
That's why in front of airports you see the sign, if you see something, say something.
Well, that's what they're talking about.
They're magic.
It could be. Could be.
I didn't actually know that. I didn't know that you could, as far up as a
First day of a Grand Prix, yeah. You can stop a match. Most people don't. But like, if you're watching your friend play and you see something drastically wrong happen, or like that circumstance that was at a Star City where they said, you misplayed this card, they can say, please don't keep playing. I want to call a judge and let them fix your problems. And so
they, all of my problems?
Well, I got a lot of debt.
Well, My scope is limited, usually, okay. The more problems I can fix, but all of the gameplay-related problems we can at least address.
The
magic problems. Okay. And so, okay.
This is my question, then. How do you move from level, say, 1 to level 2, level 2 to level 3? Is it just more tests and essays like you were talking about
before? The whole level 3 thing was the interviews and the essay questions.
Yeah, so the L1 to L2 jump is a lot smaller than the L2 to L3 jump. The L2 to L3 jump's really big.
Yeah.
There's expectations for L3s that are pretty serious, mm-hmm. and the other thing is they want to ensure that L3 means something and is a minimum standard. And so that tournament organizers can say, that's an L3 judge. I can put them on staff for my tournament, and I'll be confident that they have a pretty high minimum quality standard. Mm-hmm. And
it's like being a Navy SEAL.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I need someone to protect the president, it's like, well, he's a Navy SEAL, so he's probably good enough.
Yeah, minimum standard. even though the presidential protectors are Secret Service, right?
Yeah, but
they were all shot.
This is when the president. All of the Secret this is Service the future shot. When everything is underwater from global warming.
Yeah, this is the Mer president.
Okay. Okay. This is. Okay.
Hypothetical situation.
Okay. But so the L1 to L2 jump, L1s are defined as local judges. They're usually a judge who just does stuff at a single store.
Mm-hmm.
L2s are area judges. They're expected to be able to handle themselves at competitive RAL events. There's no expectation that a level 1 will know anything about the infraction procedure guideline for competitive events. L2s are expected to have a reasonable grasp of that. They have a 50-question test to make L2, and 10 of those? 20 of those? 10 of those are policy questions. And
what do you mean by policy questions?
So the big stuff that you need to know as a judge are the magic rules and then the magic policy stuff. The mm-hmm. tournament rules and the infraction procedure guidelines.
Okay.
The stuff about how a tournament runs, basically.
So, like, I know the rules and I know that you broke one. Now what's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah. How do you solve problems? What kind of, like, do you hand out a warning for this for missing a
red
duck confidant?
Flag.
Yeah.
red card, yellow card.
No.
Red card, that's what I meant.
What do you do if someone is playing a Tron a deck while drunk?
Well,
you give them a ticket for playing a breathalyzer?
Yeah, you give them a breathalyzer.
There's probably no rules against playing intoxicated.
Yeah, so playing intoxicated is fine. Playing obnoxiously so that your opponents all just don't want to be in the same room with you.
I play Urza's Tower. I love you, man. This guy.
Wow.
This guy would never,
like,
counter my activated abilities.
This seriously an obnoxious play? Like,
the thing is,
it's like unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah,
it'd be
unsportsmanlike conduct.
You need something like that just to, like, keep large events under, like, you need some way to be like, look, you're being an asshole. Like, we can't let you spiral out of control and destroy everyone's joy.
Yep. And some of that's also handled by the tournament organizer, because the judges usually don't have the authority to just kick somebody out of a venue.
Right.
But the tournament organizer and their appointed staff usually do.
Does Kaplan make a study guide for these tests? Can I go to Spark Barnes?
Notes? Spark Notes?
No.
Spark Notes? Can I go to Barnes & Noble?
No, but the judges have.
Wow.
Because they
want people to know.
Right.
So the
judging is like an exclusive club where our goal is to get more people into the club.
Yeah.
Come to our club.
And so... So there's a Magic Judges wiki, I'll push you guys some links because it's going to be easier than reading them off. And sure. So I'll give them to
sure.
you.
Sure, we'll put them up on our website. On
yeah, and so there's a Magic Judges wiki that has a lot of information. There are L1 classes that oftentimes L2s and L2 candidates will run L1 classes with a bunch of people who are candidates to make L1 to teach them like really the different nice. Rules components and some of the policy stuff they need to know.
Yeah.
That's a lot of rules, though, over the history of Magic. Are you expected to know?
Nope. So for L1, I really want 4 pieces of rules. I want you to know how a turn works. I want you to know how the stack works. Like, Giant Growth first, then Lightning Bolt. Is that different than Lightning Bolt first, then Giant Growth?
I believe
yes.
it is.
Yes,
I
it is.
Yes. That's the basic one, just knowing how responding to things works. Knowing how combat works,
mm-hmm.
Like not necessarily the super detailed nitty gritty, this is how banding works details, but like how does making a blocking order and a trample work? And I like them to know how power toughness stuff on creatures work. So Giant Growth and Diminish, you guys know Diminish, target creatures a 1/1 until end of turn.
Okay.
And so if I Giant Growth, so you have a Bear Cub, just a 2/2 with no abilities,
mm-hmm.
and you Giant Growth it, and then I Diminish it. How big is it?
1/1.
It's a 4/4.
No, it's a 4/4. You're right.
It's a 4/4. Yep. But we do it in the opposite order. I Diminish your creature, and then you Giant Growth it.
It's a little 1/1, buddy. Isn't it? No. No, it's still a 4/4.
Yep. Order doesn't matter.
Oh, Megan's getting to level 1.
And so,
I think that's that I think is the trickiest part of the rules is the layer. That's the layers.
Yeah, layers.
Right?
Layers are pretty tricky. Yeah. And so, but for L1s, I only care that they know how power toughness stuff works in layers.
Mm-hmm.
They should know Giant Growth, Diminish, and power toughness switching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are the 3 things that they need to know how to put together?
Because Diminish is sitting up there on the top layer. Giant Growth is underneath it. And then the creature, or whatever.
Well, other way.
I don't know what you're
it's base whatever the creature has.
Right.
Right. That's
setting.
The lowest layer.
That's the chocolate.
Yep. And then power toughness setting is like the vanilla layer that goes on top of that. And
sounds
then
good.
The frosting on top is power toughness switching.
I want to eat whatever that is.
Vanilla chocolate frosting. It's
yeah.
just a big frosting
I
pile.
Want that.
It's a bucket of frosting. It's Neapolitan frosting.
It's just a bucket of frosting.
Is that a real thing, Neapolitan frosting?
I don't know. I hope so.
No.
Wow, it should be.
Oh,
so what would your... if someone is thinking, I might want to be a judge, but I don't really know what it's like. Like, what kinds of things make a successful judge candidate?
So, I look for them to know those basic rules. I look for them to already be helping out somewhat at tournaments. If they're the rules guy at their store and they answer questions at FNMs and stuff and people trust their judgment, that's about 90-something% of getting there.
It seems like you must have to want to just enjoy being at Magic events, helping out, organizing.
Yeah. And the thing that I like most about judging is I help other people have fun.
Yeah.
I go away at the end of the day with, I made some people's day. I have a sense of accomplishment for running a good tournament, and I got to do something that I'm good at, right?
Yeah.
And then, in somebody who wants to be a judge candidate, I'm looking for that they have reasonable customer service skills, because a lot of judging is customer service, talking with people.
Yeah.
And then I look that they have minimum rules knowledge, and that they have a good sense of what kinds of things are good and bad at tournaments. Just for FNM kind of stuff, because L1s, I only expect them. My goal for a good level 1 judge that they're capable of running an FNM on their own.
Yeah.
And they, you take the test, you find out that you, for instance, didn't know the rules for 2-headed giant as well as you might want to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get told, go study some 2-headed giant, but you still passed, because it's a passing number on a level 1 test is 70%.
That is a C.
Yeah. It's not an amazingly high bar.
Like my driving exam, can I cry at the end if I need to get like a couple extra points? Does that do anything?
So if you are incredibly awesome and you're somebody that I want to see judging and you don't quite pass, what I do is I sit down, work with you a little bit. There's a cool down between retests of a couple months, and I schedule another time with you right away. And then we I get people there as much as possible.
Do you get a green jacket like the Masters golf tournament?
Like, I don't, I feel like you need, you get a warden something.
You get the stripes, right?
So the stripes.
They get the shirts.
Yeah, the stripes are the old shirt. The new shirts are the black button-up shirts.
Yes. Nice.
And nice. The problem is that there's a limited number of those that exist, and so those get handed out at Grand Prix. Because Wizards prints them and gives them.
Oh,
gives
okay. Them out. I thought they, like, so, Wizards only made 20.
No. It's
if you're wearing one, world. You hold the power to determine how magic works.
Well, there are over 4,000 magic judges in the world, and printing a run of 4,000 button-up shirts and shipping them out to everybody would be crazy. Easily expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Wizards, so when you work a Grand Prix, you the judge manager of the Grand Prix says, I have the opportunity to get some judge shirts. If anybody needs a shirt, let me know their size. And then that shirt will be there and available, but they only have a finite amount. Yeah.
Have you ever had to like either bulk up or lose weight to fit
I actually own 3 shirts now, and I used to wear a large, and now I wear an extra large, and so I have the large that I used to wear hanging in my closet, sitting there staring at me, and then the 2 extra larges that I picked up.
Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
I think about judging for Magic, and it makes me like a little. It makes me super tense because I used to be a fencing judge.
Okay,
and people. Like fencers, and especially like kids who are fencers and their parents, can be just terribly shitty to you when you're a fencing judge. They'll yell at you, like fencers will yell at you, and like yes, you can card them for that, but it's also just sort of like expected. Like you take a little bit of a verbal beating. Right. Is that like does that happen in Magic, or as a judge are you pretty much like
yes and no? Okay. So oftentimes. The hardest calls. So people will call you over for rules questions. Oftentimes the most difficult calls are we have a dispute about reality in some way.
Yeah.
And they're actually
I'm a fish.
Right. A long time in the past there used to be a penalty called failure to agree on reality.
No way, that's what it was called.
Yes.
That's
and
amazing.
This has not been around for a decade, but it was a thing. And so I mean, people come up and they dispute, you know, I think I'm at 6, you think I'm at 3. And sometimes you can sort it out where you go through and you, like, electoral disputes are, I find, the most common. Where you can sort it out, you can go back a few turns and say, yeah, you missed an attack from this.
That's
from
why
this hill giant.
It's important to say, I think, your life total and your opponent's life total every time something happens.
Yeah. Yep. At competitive, you're theoretically obligated to, anytime a life total changes, announce and confirm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
There's a whole bunch of expectations.
23 to 20, thank you.
Yeah. It takes 2 seconds, and it becomes habit, and then you do it, and then you just don't have these issues as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, because I hate getting life total disputes, I actually note the source of damage next to each time that I take damage, just like a 2-letter abbreviation for what caused it.
Yeah.
So that way I can go back, like if my opponent says, did you take that fetch land? And I go, I have MF next to this 1 damage, Marsh Flats.
Yeah.
And so, be like, I totally took that fetch land last turn. Yeah, okay, got it. And then so we sort it out. It's a tiny little thing. It also lets me go back and look at games and see what the heck killed me last game.
Or
I look at a tournament 2 days later and I go, looks
what
like it took a lot.
What do I need to deal with better?
I'm dying a lot from accidentally pinging myself.
Yeah, exactly. And so
I will ping 1 to myself. Oh, shoot!
Yeah. And
Lover
sometimes...
true.
But oftentimes, the really hard ones are people just have disputes about something happening or not happening, or how this card resolved. Or I was called over at one point in a tournament because a player was playing in Modern. They're playing the Eggs deck, which is a combo deck.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, and
very annoying to play against.
The important thing was that he was at 1 life starting his turn, or 2 life starting his turn, and he used a fetch land on his upkeep. To try to make his draw a little bit better by removing 1 more land from his deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And neither he or his opponent wrote it down because they were pretty sure, or his opponent was pretty sure that he was just going to combo up and kill him.
Yeah.
And so he took he drew his card for turn, played some artifacts, sacrificed some artifacts, cast Second Sunrise, put his artifacts back into the battlefield, sacrificed some artifacts, and then fetched with his fetch land. And he picks up his deck, looks through it, pulls out a card, and starts shuffling. His opponent goes, you're dead.
You're dead, man.
Yeah. And he goes, we didn't record the life total change.
Oh!
And
Whose fault is that?
It was both of theirs. They got warnings. But the point is that they both agreed on what had happened. But he wanted the world to be where he got to say, no, I didn't want to fetch because I was at one. He didn't record his own life total change, though.
Right.
But they both agreed. He had fetched earlier in the turn. He was actually at one life. The opponent's like, I didn't write it down because I was dead. Like he was just going through the motions to kill me. I just need to make sure that he actually had his victory condition still in his deck.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, it sounds like you killed yourself. Like, you got to the point where you were searching and shuffling.
Mm-hmm.
You're dead. And
you're dead.
And I can imagine he might be kind of
right,
upset.
And so he was upset, and then we had a long discussion after where, and this is a previous iteration of the life total change rules, mm-hmm. where now everybody has to announce and confirm for everything. This is a little bit before that, where you were responsible for your life total. Your opponent's notes about life total were their private notes. They could be wrong, and you weren't responsible for fixing it because it was their private notes. And they were responsible for their life total, and you were responsible for your life total.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just very, very justifiably unhappy that, you know, his opponent didn't have to point out you're going to kill yourself with a fetch land.
Right, yeah.
And, but he did.
Well, I mean, even if the other guy had been at one life, it's not his responsibility to be like, you're about to kill yourself with your fetch land.
Right. And he didn't even, like, he looked at his life pad, saw two, and fetched. Because he hadn't recorded his own life total change.
Right.
But they agreed on it. And so, this was a dispute about something that happened and sorting out, you know, A, what happened, B, what are the players' opinions on it, C, did the opponent who is sitting there fish him into doing this by not recording life total? The opponent's like, I'm tapped out. I gave up. Like, I was looking at my side.
I was curled in a ball when it happened.
And so,
I was crying.
And so, right. And so, but disputes like that where people don't quite agree on what happens in the game. I saw an appeal at a Grand Prix several years ago where the head judge had to come sort it out because their life total pads didn't match in any particular. Like, they didn't have the same differences of changes. It wasn't like at one point they missed a fetch land early and then they had the same 3-3-3 damage or something. They just both had randomly different life totals. They were playing different games.
Wow.
And he had to sort out. He was like,
they were both playing the person diagonally to the right.
Well, and so, and the worst part was that neither of them were native English speakers.
Oh, no.
And so, tricky. So then they both spoke English, but they had accents and they weren't fully fluent and conversant.
Right.
And so then...
And one of their words for 20 was the other one's words for 2.
For 40. Yeah. Oh.
Well.
220.
And so he had to sort out this issue where they didn't agree on what was going on in the game.
One
guy's like, I've got you at 3. And the other guy's like, I'm at 7. I don't know what you're talking about.
Megan played some Germans once.
I did. They all spoke English. They were
really
nice.
Well, these guys spoke English, but especially when you're like, this is a win and in to get to day 2 of a Grand Prix, and so they were both worked up and excited, and they've been playing all day, and so no slight against them. They're both guys that I actually like to see at tournaments, but they, you know, like native English speakers get to the end of the day and they have a hard time expressing themselves in their own native language.
And I got
I have a card
for life.
Me, checks. I've been playing 8 rounds of Magic, is just like, card. Put down this card.
Put card.
Here's a card.
Tap card.
Put 10 card. Bs.
Take damage.
And this, what format was this? This was old 7-year extended, if I remember right. Nice. And so it was very complicated. It
you
was
guys
invasion
missed out.
Extended.
You guys missed out on type 1.5.
Type 1.x?
Sure.
So Theros came out, you guys.
Mm-hmm. What?
I'm so super excited because it's really fun.
It's not out yet.
Oh, it's pre-out.
It's
pre-release.
It's prouted.
You can't buy boosters from a store yet.
Although by the time you hear this,
you can.
Yeah, you can.
Since you're all now confused, we're going to talk about some more confusing stuff. With Theros came some new... rules.
Some new keywords, some new ability words, and a few new rules. So we're just going to talk about, we'll just talk about each one and touch on kind of the, what is the easiest thing to confuse about it, just so that you guys know what you're talking about when you're out in the alley playing for hundreds.
Slinging some cards.
What alley is
that how you, that's how I pay my rent.
Yeah, we play a lot of back alley magic. Yeah.
Just right on the concrete?
Yeah, yeah.
We call it sleep. Bam. Yeah. Back alley magic.
You know you're hardcore. You have to press down on the gravel when you tap. Yeah.
Scrape.
Those okay. cards, even if you drew some money rares, they're not going to be worth anything. Nope. It's just that $100. Yep. Take it or leave it.
All right, you guys. First new thing. Heroic. What the heck?
I don't know.
Yep. Let's talk about it.
What is it, technically?
Go for it.
Oh, well.
I don't know.
So the word heroic is an ability word. Mm-hmm. In general, if something's in italics on a magic card, that word can be ignored safely.
Yay, whether it's
just like flavor.
Yeah, whether it's flavor text.
Yep, flavor text, reminder text, and ability words are all in italics.
Why would I ever disregard flavor text, Ben? Well, it means a lot to me.
Well, you don't disregard it, but it doesn't do anything in gameplay.
You know, they should make a card that has flavor text.
That
this creature
something.
Has flying.
Go look up Great Whale.
Okay.
what?
Great Whale.
Great Whale.
Read that flavor text.
Okay, bye, Megan.
The flavor text says, as a great whale dies, it flips onto its back, and so an island is born.
Does it become an island?
It's very, very close. This is the flavor text. It's very, very close to rules text. Dies is a rule. Is a word that means something. Island is a magic thing, and you can flip things onto their back to turn them face down.
Oh my god!
I literally thought.
Totally sounds. So when you say it like that, I'm like, oh yeah, this whale dies. I'll flip it over and now it's an island.
Right. I think that would be so cool. Wizards, take note.
Yeah. Look, we gotta look into this.
That's flavor text that looks a lot like
but heroic, text. Not flavor text. Yeah. Ability word, you said.
Yep, it's an ability word. An ability word is just a way to make a whole bunch of things that behave the same easy to talk about.
Right, and so that just means that it's gonna explain to you what's going on. Yeah. And you don't have to know what it means or read reminder text.
Yep.
Okay.
And so every creature with heroic has a trigger that when you target this with your own spell, then it does something. And the blue ones mostly do spell type effects, scrying or drawing cards or tapping things.
But I could I target my opponent's guy with something?
Yeah, you can target your opponent's stuff that is heroic and it won't trigger. Because only your own spells trigger heroic.
Oh.
And so it's just a straight up positive.
Okay.
Abilities don't trigger heroic.
Right.
And this is something that I've seen some people mess up. If you like use an equipment to equip to a heroic creature.
That's not a target.
It targets, but it's not a spell. Heroic says only spells.
Okay.
And
got
so
it.
So equipment won't trigger it, but auras will. Because you're casting that spell, it's a spell that's targeting the thing while it's being cast as an aura.
But it has to be when you cast a spell.
Yes.
And it has to target.
Yep.
So for instance, something like if you cast Mizzium Mortars, which just goes over everything.
If you overload Mizzium
Mortars will never in any way turn on heroic because it only targets opponent's creatures.
Yep.
Oh yeah. That's true. Okay, so this is wrong on several accounts.
Yep. But it,
what I'm trying to think of is something that would do.
There's overloads that target your own stuff.
Or like if you, this is a terrible example, but if you like cast Supreme Verdict.
Yeah, Supreme Verdict.
It doesn't target anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there's heroes where it could be relevant for. Like there's a hero that says when you target this with a spell you control, draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
So if Supreme Verdict set him off, you get to draw a card on the way out, but it doesn't.
Right. And for example, there are cards that will copy instants or sorceries, but you don't cast the copies.
Yeah, and heroic only triggers on something cast. Yep.
But if you have something like Hidden Strings with Cypher,
you do cast
those because it says cast
Cypher,
in the reminder text for Cypher.
Yep.
And so then that would trigger it if you're targeting something of your own.
I knew I was going to play that Hidden Strings deck someday.
Yeah, it got real good.
Now you can go make a deck that has four Hidden Strings and a bunch of heroic creatures.
That actually wouldn't be that bad because Hidden Strings has two targets, so you can make two white heroic creatures that put counters on themselves better.
Let's do it, you guys.
Let's do it.
All right, what else new? Is there anything else you want to say about heroic?
Nope.
Okay. How about our good friend, Bestow? I've been hearing a lot of questions about Bestow.
Bestow is the most complicated new thing in the set.
Yeah.
It's, so Bestow has two parts, basically. It's an alternate way to cast, just like Overload's an alternate way to cast a spell to get an Overload effect. Bestow lets you choose an alternate way to cast the spell. And if you do, then the spell behaves a little differently. Bestow is, right now, only on creatures.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why it can't go on other stuff, which I assume is probably going to happen later in the block.
Crazy.
That's my guess. That's my guess. But,
What?
So, when Great Whale Eidolon dies,
well,
it turns into an island.
If you bestow this equipment instead of normal casting it, you get +10/+10.
Well,
what?
To what?
Just whatever.
Just to you. You personally are +10.
+10 life and +10 poison counters?
Yes.
Yay.
+10 bees.
You're dead. +10 bees.
But sorry. So it's fine. So bestow is an alternate way to cast cast spells. It's only on creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bestow, instead of playing it as a creature, you play it as an aura with enchant creature. And so you get to target a creature. Could be yours, could be your opponent's, and then it behaves like an aura. It resolves. It's on the creature. The second half of bestow is if the thing's an aura, and whatever it's attached to dies or becomes an illegal thing for it to be attached to, like it stops being a creature.
Mm-hmm.
There's that hero that Antoessus that animates lands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you could animate a land and then bestow on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it stops being a creature at the end of turn.
Right.
And so so if a bestow thing would fall off to the graveyard like an aura does, instead it falls off to the battlefield and turns back into the creature that it's printed as.
Nice landing.
The one thing that bestow doesn't remind you about, it has a bunch of reminder text.
Yeah.
But it doesn't remind you that if you target your creature with bestow as an aura, and your creature gets killed in response to your bestow aura, it lands on the battlefield as a creature.
Even though it was not a creature spell.
Yes. Which is, but that isn't that unusual.
Okay.
Because let's say that you have that animated land, right, mm-hmm. from Antoessa, and you cast clone. Mm-hmm. And you clone the land. It lands on the battlefield as a land. It's never a creature.
My opponent has cloned my 7/7 7 mountain before.
Yep. Awaken the Ancient. Yep. And
beautiful.
So that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a thing where things land is some different type because they have some other effect changing what they are.
Yeah, they don't get all the layers. They just get the bottom layer.
Yep.
Chocolate.
Steel bottom layer.
Yes.
The pan.
And so that's part of the bestow stuff that says it's when it stops being an aura, it's a creature.
Okay.
Bestow cards are always enchantments. Their type line says enchantment creature and then some creature type. Most of them are like nymphs or dryads or eidolons. I don't even remember what type all the eidolons are.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably spirits. But
question.
Sure.
Do you get like a little sheet that tells you how to pronounce all this crap?
I don't. I actually probably butcher a lot of them. The wizards every once in a while on the daily MTG site will have a pronunciation guide for a set. And so they'll be like, look at all these words that we've given you that we've entirely made up. That we're going to tell you how we pronounce them.
I have a perma beef.
I can say it however I want.
Right. You can call it jite, you can call it jit, you can call it that stupid psi thing. You can pronounce it however you want.
I can call her aunt house.
I'm still mad about Llanowar
elves.
Elves, because I believe you should pronounce the double L as the proper Welsh pronunciation.
Mm. Yeah.
Llanowar.
That. Sure. I'd be down with that, but Americans are really, really bad at non-Latin vowel sounds or vowel and consonant sounds.
Well, that's you true. Guys, I'm just putting it out there. Wizards, again, take note.
Call me. All right, so.
So question. When your little your bestow dude mm-hmm. is bestowed as an enchantment on another creature,
mm-hmm.
say that I had like a just some random tutu and I put
you had a bear cub.
Okay. Yep, I have a little bear cub and I put a celestial archon on him.
Okay.
Could my opponent at that point while it's on there could my opponent target it with a creature removal spell? Or only an enchantment removal spell?
Only enchantment removal. Creatures can't be attached to things.
Okay.
Attaching is a special term in magic.
Mating.
Well.
No, Maria. No.
There's no rule text for that.
Yeah.
What the cards do outside of the game is their own business.
Oh, okay, okay, sorry.
And so attach is a special thing in Magic. Only auras, equipment, mm-hmm. and fortifications can be attached to things. Well, the one fortification. But and so creatures that are attached to something stop being attached to something. And so they're just not creatures at all, because then the creatures can't be attached rule would make them fall off. Mm.
Okay. So it's only an enchantment at that point, and it could not be targeted by creature removal.
Yep, you can't Doomblade the Celestial Archon that's an aura.
I wish. I would rather hit that than that stupid bear.
Agreed.
Right?
But
I can hit it with enchantment removal.
Yeah, and you can always hit it with an enchantment removal. Being an enchantment all the time is kind of a drawback. Because mm-hmm. there's what's the name of that green exile and enchantment that's really good? Exile target artifact or enchantment.
No, path to sorrow.
Fade into antiquity.
Thank you. There you go. So that card is really good against bestow creatures because it can always get them.
Yeah, every time.
Nice. Yep.
You can't hide from me. I'm antiquity. No, you will fade into me eventually.
You will end up in a back room of a museum where no one will come to look at you.
The other question that I've been getting on bestow is, so I've got that archon bestowed on that bear cub,
mm-hmm.
and then you Doomblade my bear cub on my turn.
Yeah.
And becomes a creature. The question is, can that archon attack right away? What you do is you check if that archon's been just like with animating anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You check if you've had it under your control since the start of your turn,
mm-hmm.
and if you have, then it can attack. And if you just cast it this turn, well, then you have it, so it can. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So people ask if they have summoning sickness, and I go they. Well, it depends on whether or not they have summoning sickness. Because, you gotta check.
it's like, does my naiad have summoning sickness? Look, I don't know your life.
Pretty much.
You should be keeping track of your own naiads, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so there aren't any cards like this in this set, but say you were able to, blink a naiad out and then back in or something. Something that's been stowed.
Like cloud shift it.
Yeah.
Stowed.
Something that's been bestowed onto a creature.
Stowed.
So it is an enchantment aura.
Yep.
And you blink it. When it comes back into the battlefield, does it come back in as an aura that you can attach to something?
It'll come back as a creature.
Oh.
So whenever something comes mm-hmm. it enters the battlefield from somewhere, it's a new object,
mm-hmm.
and it looks at just whatever its base stuff is, unless its text says otherwise, of course. So it'll come back as the base card stuff, because you aren't casting it with bestow.
And the bestow rule specifically says it's only coming in as an aura if you paid the bestow cost.
Yep.
Oh, I see.
So similar to evoke or something like that.
Yep.
You didn't pay the alternate cost, so when it comes back, it's just going to be a creature.
Yep.
So when I get 500 of these things in Momir Basic, they're just going to be creatures.
They're just bad guys.
I never get the fun.
Some of them are reasonable guys, you're going to be unhappy with them in Momir for the most part.
Wah.
All right, should we move on to quickly mention some of these other ones?
Okay.
Sure.
All right, so we have Monstrous.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yep.
I learned something fun about this playing the other day.
Okay.
You can Monstrous in response, right?
Yep, Monstrous is an instant.
Yes, so if I cast a Fleece main line and I have 5 mana up.
And they're like, kill it.
I can just be like, nope.
Monstrous.
Mofo, I'm Monstrous it.
And it's hexproof because it's Monstrous. FYI, that's what you're talking about.
I also heard something, which is some of the cards have Monstrous triggers, right?
Yep.
So for example, Keepsake Gorgon. It has Monstrosity 1 and Death Touch, and it says when Keepsake Gorgon becomes Monstrous, destroy target, non-Gorgon creature an opponent controls. If someone, let's say someone has Voyage's End, and I activate Monstrous because I want to kill something, what happens if they bounce the Gorgon?
It don't kill nothing, man.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Oh, no, but I paid so much mana. Oh, don't I deserve to be reimbursed?
Did you buy that policy?
Apple Care? I did not buy Gorgon Care.
I thought it was Doomblade Care.
Doomblade Care.
Why didn't you buy it? I know that it's extra, but it's always worth
it. It was a black creature. I thought I wouldn't need it.
I learned something too about monstrosity in that it is something that, like, okay, I'm going to say this and you're going to be like, oh, you're saying it so bad.
No,
okay.
That's fine.
All right.
People talk colloquially all the time.
So you have it and you activate monstrosity. Yeah. So say it gets 3 +1 +1 counters. Sure. Somehow those counters are removed.
Yes.
It is still monstrous.
I took them.
You took them and ate them. It is still monstrous, even though it does not
the
have those
spell
give and
take
counters
right,
anymore, and it cannot be reactivated.
Yep. So +1/+1 counters for monstrous are just a memory aid. Mm-hmm. They're just a way to let you remember more easily, and especially your opponent to remember looking at the board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that guy's counters on it. It's because he's monstrous.
Yeah.
And the counters aren't connected to
what
it.
What if I put counters on it another way? It's not monstrous.
It won't make any difference. Monstrous is something that's true about it. It's something, a statement that's made that's true about a creature.
Yeah.
It's not tied to the counters in any way.
What if that creature itself thinks that that's like a false statement? Like
I don't feel monstrous.
I don't believe that I'm monstrous. I don't believe I'm a monster.
This keepsake Gorgon just becomes like a 3/7 or a 3/6, and it's like I'm not actually any better than 100-handed one here.
If you guys, I don't feel that great.
What if you make a creature that's monstrous lose all of its abilities? Is it still monstrous?
It will still be monstrous. Monstrous isn't an ability.
It's a fundamental property.
No, it's a statement that's made to it. So the fundamental properties are characteristics.
Oh, wow.
So the name of a card, the mana cost, the type line.
Okay. It just is like it is burned into it once it happens.
Yeah, monstrous is like being untapped or tapped. This is close
true.
Enough. Yeah, it's just something that you say that's true about the card. It's not a status, but you can treat it like it's a status.
So like I could imagine, for instance, that once monstrous happens on my creature, that it has now like written like on the card by Wizards that is what it is. On like its name, like so even if it loses all its abilities, it's still up there with the name, meaning that it always is that.
That's pretty close to how it works. So, and it's close enough where you'll be able to sort it out in any real world circumstance. So
monstrous keepsake right. Gorgon.
So monstrous is forever. Unless you bounce it. Unless you bounce it.
That's the new the new slogan for Jared's diamonds.
Monstrous is forever.
It's true. So here's a neat question.
Yeah.
You know Artisan of Forms?
Yes.
He's the heroic guy that can change to copy
something.
Oh, that
guy just confuses me.
Uh-oh. Right. And so you have an Artisan of Forms, and you copy that keepsake Gorgon for a while with Artisan, and you make him monstrous. And then you make him copy a 100-handed one now, who's a different guy with monstrous. Is he still monstrous?
Oh, my God.
Oh, no! Oh, no!
And this will come up in Limited.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because you'll copy one monster and then be like, I want to copy that guy because he's bigger.
That monster is better.
Yeah, that monster is bigger. That monster is an ember swallower.
Man, I would think it would become whatever the new one was.
Nope. Monstrous is something that's true about that object, and it's once he flips the monster switch, he's monstrous even if he changes all the other stuff about him.
Wow, that's bonkers.
Yep.
But you wouldn't get the counters.
The counters would stick on him because he copies something, and so when he copies something.
But like for instance, 100-handed one has 3 counters. Keepsake Gorgon only has 1.
Right, and
it would only have 1 counter.
Right.
Okay.
But you might want to do it anyways to get like other abilities because 100-handed ones has if it's monstrous ability, a static ability that says now suddenly I can block some bonus guys.
A lot of bonus guys.
And so the Keepsake Gorgon's cheaper to make monstrous because he's only black 1, and so you can become monstrous as Keepsake Gorgon, switch over to 100-handed one, and you can copy your opponent's 100-handed ones, right? Yeah, target
so
creature.
So then
yeah.
you would... So would it then be a 4/7 100-handed
one? It'd
be
a 4/6.
A 4/6. I don't remember.
100-handed one's a 3/5.
Okay. Yeah. 4/6 then.
Yeah,
all right.
it'd be a 4/6. It would be monstrous, so it could block an additional 99 creatures.
Okay.
Got
so, but if he were not monstrous, so copying doesn't copy the monstrous property?
Yeah, the Artisan of Forms remember whether or not he personally has become monstrous in the past.
So it's kind of like having a counter on it that says monstrous.
Yep.
Whew, man.
Yikes.
Wow, man.
All right, I'm ready to force this deck just so I can
Artisan
do some
forms.
Weird things.
Yeah,
there's a couple guys that do weird things that are suddenly like, oh, I'm monstrous. 100-handed one. There's Arbor Giant is the green one that.
Oh man, he becomes just massive.
He's huge.
Yeah, he's
right.
Pretty good.
Monstrous.
He's monstrous.
And so, Arbor
Arbor Colossus.
Yeah. Oh no, that is a when it becomes monstrous.
Yeah, when it becomes monstrous, it destroys a
flyer. I'd have to go look and find it if they're... Oh, there's the... Huh. I don't remember if there's other guys that have static abilities based on being monstrous. Oh, Fleece Mane Line, right? As long as Fleece Mane Line is monstrous, yeah.
Indestructible.
Yeah, and so you could... You can power up as a 100-handed one and then swap for being a Fleece Mane Line because you really need to be hexproof and indestructible.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as that Fleece Mane Line is not hexproof.
Well, it could be your Fleece Mane Line.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And playing your Bant deck in draft because...
Absolutely.
You're super good.
Why wouldn't you?
I have a quick note to make about the God cards.
Okay.
Which Ben and I discovered when we were playing Two-Headed Giant. I needed to discard a creature card to give one of my cards +2/+2.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if discarding the god counted. But until it is cast, it is in fact a creature in your hand.
Yep. And it's actually a creature spell on the stack, too, even if you don't have enough devotion.
So you could respond to it with creature removal while it was on the stack? You could
essence scatter it?
Yeah, you could essence scatter it.
Could you also negate it?
Nope, because it's not a non-creature spell. Because negates is target non-creature spell.
Yes.
But you could swan song it or annul it.
Yes, because it's an enchantment all the time, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's crazy, but then once it's down, not a creature if you don't have the devotion.
Yeah, if you don't have enough devotion. Yep.
Right.
The text on a card, unless it says otherwise, only applies when it's on the battlefield.
Yep.
So unless it says use this ability only when it's in your hand or this is always true... Like, no matter where it is.
Or it only works somewhere else. Like, Timuret the Murder King.
Yeah.
He has the ability to return himself from the graveyard.
That name.
But that second ability, the black ability to return himself, only works in the graveyard.
Yeah.
Because it only makes sense for it to work in the
you
graveyard.
You can't return yourself from the graveyard if you're not in the graveyard.
Right.
It's just like when I tried to drop out of... air conditioning repair school.
And I'm like, Ben, you're not in air conditioning
but I just want to drop out.
Ben, yeah, but you're not in it.
Ben, you
can't. Why would you want to drop out? John Goodman is your boss, right?
That's why. Trying to get his attention.
Okay.
All right.
John Goodman, pay attention to me.
Do we want to mention quick devotion? Is there anything we need to say about devotion? We talked about Scry last episode. Anything neat about devotion? Seems pretty straightforward to me.
Devotion is really straightforward. It evaluates all the time. When we were talking about Cloud Shift and Flickering before, if a god is attacking and you have enough devotion, the god's attacking, and then you Cloud Shift another creature to make devotion drop beneath 5.
Yeah.
There was a time when that god wasn't a creature, so it couldn't be attacking, so it stopped attacking.
Right. And then when it comes back, now it's a creature again, but
missed its chance.
Right, yeah. Well, it attacked already, but it stopped being a creature, so it got removed from combat.
No way.
Weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's
weird stuff.
The other note about that I learned was that it checked, like Grey Merchant checks itself also.
Yes.
So as it comes into play, you get 2 for sure these.
Yeah.
Well, not for sherzies.
Because they could respond to the trigger.
Oh, okay.
If I kill it with Dark Betrayal or bounce it with Voyage's End, you might be draining me for 0.
Yeah. Oh, that would make me so mad.
Well, it did when I did it to you yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, I Dark Betrayaled your Grey Merchant.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You got me for 0.
Bummer.
How quickly I forget these things. I'm glad opponents
figured that out over the weekend.
These guys did.
We did.
We did.
Well, to be perfectly fair, we only Grey Merchanted when we had devotion 5 or more.
Ah,
so
nice.
I mean, we were doing pretty good anyways.
But. We actually cast a Grey Merchant when we had a couple guys out and 2 apparent overlords.
Ooh.
So
for a total of 16.
Nice. Did you ever Journey to the Underworld?
We did that twice in one game.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Living the dream.
We made bad attacks for a while, and they're like, fine. What's his name? The guy that blackmails based on devotion?
The discard guy?
Yeah, the discard guy. Right, and so like they would block that guy. They're like, it's a 1/3. We want to clear guys off the board so you don't get in for more damage. And I'm like, guy in my graveyard. On your end step, I'm going to send my gray merchant to retrieve my discard guy. And I'm going to rock your hand, and then we're going to get you for 14. And they were like,
awesome.
Huh. Okay.
I love it.
I'm glad we weren't the only people with this idea to run Mono Black into a giant.
It didn't feel very fair.
It was pretty unfair.
That deck was actually really unfair because it wasn't quite Mono Black. It had 3 Lightning Strikes, a Magma Jet, and one other red card.
Yeah.
Spark
Jolt. That's all you need.
That's a lot to the face.
Yeah. It was mostly actually just to kill their creatures that we could set up for Grey Merchants.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was a pretty good two-headed deck.
So while we've got you here, Judge Rob, you mentioned earlier in the episode...
Can we call you J-Ro?
J-Ro?
J-Ro is a little awkward, but sure.
That's what they call us.
It's either J-Ro or R-Mac. I don't know.
You had a magic wedding.
Well, we had a lot of magic themed stuff at the wedding. Because,
what did you do? Did you have a magic cake?
We had magic themed rings was the big thing. So when you look at my ring here, it has 7 stones in it. It's got the 5 magic colors and then our birthstones.
No way!
And then,
is this what they made Ring of Destinies off of?
Maybe. My wife's ring is actually a lot better. It's got 5 pearl cut stones and the 5 magic colors all at the center, and then the 2 birthstones as round cuts off to the side.
Wow.
I can ship you guys a link to one of the pictures.
It's so really, she's really a player cool. too, I assume.
Yeah, she plays. We're the ones who two-headed it at the pre-release together, and she actually proposed to me with this ring, which was really cool.
I like it! Ladies taking charge.
It's true. And so... There were 3 different judges that showed up in their judge blacks with ties and the other
bow ties.
No. But they were very, very loud normal ties.
Okay.
Our wedding was essentially just family and then a very, very small number of close friends, most of which were magic friends.
Nice.
And we had 5 petal flowers as the main theme on the cake.
Nice.
And
I get it.
Ruth wore something related to each of the 5 colors.
So she just wasn't like something old, something new.
She was something trample. Something haste.
Yeah, exactly. And
something
she was
flying.
Something death touch.
And our primary colors were black, white, and red for everything. And then we used like blue and green occasionally when they made sense, but it's hard to actually make it all look good.
Until death do us touch.
And then we played a lot of board games, including some EDH at the exception.
Cool. So Rob, afterwards. This may be a personal question, but did you top 8 your own wedding?
Well, we didn't really have a tournament as such. Oh, I was one of the last 8 people there.
Yeah.
Okay, well that counts. That's a top 8.
Yeah.
But, were you one of 8 people who was happily married at the end of that wedding?
I was one of 2.
Then you top 8.
So it's a finalist?
Yeah.
Finalists acceptable?
Okay. Totally.
Cool.
And so, we had a great time. It was the goal was to make it a big gathering with a lot of games and a lot of fun stuff, and it was.
Cool.
And so that was just in August. So
is it true that you can only be married, like the officiator has to be a higher level judge than you?
Well, man, that'd be really awkward. I don't know who, I don't know if any L4 pluses offhand that can officiate.
Ooh, if you want to be the only level 4.
We're looking
4,
for a good niche here.
That's right. If you're a level 4 or level 5 judge, you go get that certificate online right now.
And you will be the only one in the world.
It's probably a lot easier than becoming an L4, right?
Well, probably.
Yeah, probably true. Like, I think the newest L3 to L4 jump was probably Sean Catanese, the most recent L4.
Okay.
And he's been an L3 for, 4 years, 3 years, somewhere in there.
Wait, are any of the L4s like ship captains?
Loophole.
Because they
loophole.
Can... Loophole.
Sheldon Mennery was in the Navy, if I remember right.
There we go.
Sheldon.
There we go.
Sheldon Mennery, there you go.
But he's a judge emeritus now. That's the 6th judge level, is judge emeritus. Is for judges who are retired from actively judging but are really big parts of the program still. In terms of they're the people who are the the old masters and the people who still want to be involved, but they, like, Sheldon was level 5. He had judged worlds for several years, and Sheldon's fantastic.
You guys are, like, all know each other.
Yeah, yeah. We're a really closely knit community, actually.
All right, you guys. So we made a music video. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all out there in listener land have seen it yet, because it's glorious. Yeah. It's glorious.
Oh, that's one word.
It covers everyone in it with glory. Yes.
It's like the sun.
Yeah, you can't look too long.
Are you sure it's not gory?
Maybe. Okay. And if you want to take a look at it, go to our website, magicthematuring.com, or head over to themeatery.org. But in case you want to bypass all that and just hear all of the comments that we've garnered, this music video was a parody of the song Dynamite, and it was for the Theros pre-release.
We wrote some new lyrics.
We did. We wore togas and danced around. We made some
references.
And so here's some of the comments we got, which I think are just hilarious, so we're going to read some of them now.
Yep. Well, can I read this first one? I love it.
Here you go.
3 minutes and 39 seconds of poorly written, auto-tuned lyrics that you will never get back in your life. Also some things that should never be done to magic cards, like licking them. Other than that, not bad.
Oh god, I love it. All right. Second one I love. Cringeworthy, but what did you expect? I'm currently sending this to other people in my playgroup. Ha ha. Nice.
It is hilarious. Great job, MTA cast. Just don't take that to the X Factor. Simon hates rotation.
He's not happy with the new set. What the hell did I just watch? I can't believe I watched the whole thing.
We had quite a few people who were apparently stunned at their own ability to finish watching the video. Whole thing.
Good job, guys. We believed in you. We knew you could do it.
We got a good one, which said, "My life just got better." That was a nice one.
Wow.
Did they say it got better because they were done watching the video?
Maybe they just left that part out. How about this one? Fun idea, but the singers sound worse than Kidz Bop.
You guys, those kids on Kidz Bop are talented singers.
Yeah, look, I'm not someday we'll get by there. That comparison. Someday we'll get there.
They're just good. They're just really good.
Yeah, so if you want to find out what all the fuss is about, head to our website and check out the video, and hopefully you too will be able to get through the whole thing. Yeah.
Let us know. Let us know how far into it you're able to listen.
Thanks so much, Rob. That was awesome.
Yes, thank you. And thank you. For everything you do, it's a testament to the Magic community that we're able to have so many large tournaments centered on such a complicated game, and they
and
happen.
People don't get in fist fights.
People never, rarely to never get in fist fights.
I've only seen the two, so I have stories for days.
Can we close on a fist fight story? Just pick one fist fight story.
So I think the best physical action story is Grand Prix Chicago 2000 and something.
Yeah. It was 10 years after the Great Fire.
Well, so there had been a gang of thieves that had been working magic tournaments.
Oh, you mean like pickpockets?
They stole magic cards.
On a larger scale, though, they take your bag.
Oh.
And
binder grabbers.
They take your bag, they take your binder. And so, like...
Binder finders.
Yeah. And this is a big PSA. Put your foot through your bag strap when you sit down.
Yep.
Keep
your stuff in front of you. Don't set it behind your chair. Don't put it in a place where people can take it. As a proof of concept, a couple of judges at GP Kansas City... went on a bag stealing spree where they would pick up the bag, walk around to the other side of the table, and show it to the person that they had just taken it from, and then hand it to them.
I had no idea.
And they were keeping score, and like partway through Saturday, I think they gave up at about 16 each. This gang of thieves were working Grand Prix, and everyone was pretty sure that it was the same group because it was endemic. And it was very, very sophisticated. There are people who are bad at it, and these guys weren't bad at it.
Yeah.
And somebody had kind of figured out... we were aware that they were probably going to be working Grand Prix Chicago. Like, the tournament organizer gets up and makes an announcement at the start of a Grand Prix. And they'll oftentimes say things like, keep track of your stuff. Watch for it. And people don't anyways.
Mm-hmm.
It does help a little bit, but... people at magic tournaments they have busy lives. They want to play magic.
They got a lot on their minds.
They don't want to pay attention to their binder full of revised duels. And so one of the judges at the event, Adam Shaw, saw somebody lifting a bag. And he pointed to another judge, flagged him over to the other end of the row, and they pincered him between them, and Adam Shaw tackled the guy while he was trying to flee.
Tackle!
And, wow. Yes. And he ended up getting caught because of this, and he went to the police station for attempted theft, but they didn't have a lot to get him with, because he'd picked up this bag that clearly wasn't his, but it wasn't a big deal until he used his one phone call to call back to the hotel and say, can you take everything in my room and mail it to me back home? And he gives them his address, and the police hear this, and they say, well, this is his hotel room, and this is all the stuff from the weekend. And so they went to his hotel room, they got a warrant, went into the hotel room, and it was just full of all sorts of stolen things that they had stolen over the weekend.
No way.
Thousands and thousands of dollars and stuff.
Wow.
And the huge majority of people, so the police gave them the option. They said, we want to press charges, we want to make this a felony. They're collectibles, they're worth a lot of money. But in order to do so, we have to hold on to the evidence until after the trial completes.
Oh,
yikes.
And so those cops, people don't get
and
their
so,
stuff.
And so
those
they said,
cops learned how to play magic.
Well, they said, you can take your stuff, or we can hold on to it. Like, if you don't want it to be part of the trial, that's fine. And most of the people took their stuff back, except for one guy who had like a $10,000 binder or something. Like, we're talking Beta Duels, we're talking a vintage deck.
A strand of Richard Garfield's DNA.
Yeah. And he said, that's fine, you can hold on to this for a few months. And he said, that's okay, press charges based on my stuff.
Because $10,000 worth of stuff is just like, that's enough to press charges.
Some of this, some of this is a little apocryphal. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was a very expensive bag full of stuff.
Wow.
And so he and Adam Shaw were the big heroes of that. And I don't remember his name. I will try to go look it up. But it was years ago. This is 2007, 2008.
Kudos
and,
to that dude.
Yeah. And so, apparently he was one of a group of three. And the three of them received lifetime bans from DCI tournaments. And so they are no longer welcome at Magic events.
Thanks for listening to our show, everybody.
Yeah. And we're going
to
end on that note. Don't steal shit.
Yeah, don't steal things. Judges will try to catch you as much as possible.
Thanks again to Judge Rob McKenzie for being with us and giving us some learning.
Yeah, anytime.
It was awesome.
That was so awesome.
In the meantime, you guys can find us on magicTheAmaturing.com. We're going to put some links up there.
You can find us at MTAcast on Twitter.
And you can also email us at magicTheAmaturing@gmail.com.
If you'd like me to be a total jerk and really ignore you a lot, you can find me on Magic Online.
That sounds like a great deal.
I know. I'm Ice Cream Socialist. I don't do it on purpose. You can say hi. I would love that.
My my MTGO name is Middle Schooler.
And I'm Horny_Unicorny. Message me and we'll say hi.
Rob, do you have anywhere that listeners can find you if they want to know more about you?
Absolutely. They can email me at my Gmail account, Robbit, R-O-B-B-I-T, at gmail.com.
All right.
Is my Gmail contact address. And that's usually the best way to get me. I respond to emails reasonably fast most of the time. I feel guilty if I don't, so.
Sure, yeah.
Nice.
Yep, guilt factor.
Catholic upbringing, yeah.
Well, Lutheran upbringing, but yeah.
Yeah, similar.
Same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah, you can also find us on themeatery.org, and we post articles and our show there every Monday.
Yay.
Yeah.
Woo.
Awesome, thanks for listening, guys. We will talk to you all later this night. We're going to call all
dreams.
Of you.
Personally. Well, I was going to visit their dreams. Are you going to call?
I'm going to call. Okay. In their dreams. On the dream phone.
I'm going to go figure out if Neapolitan ice cream that exists.
Neapolitan frosting.
Well, if it doesn't, you can make your own. You just buy 3 cans of frosting and lay it down in strips, right?
Neapolitan.
I'm going into a diabetic coma right now.
Goodbye, listener. Goodbye.